Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland. On Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
And a good morning to you. Welcome to Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. We have another provocative show for you today. And of course, the decision by the grand jury is heavy on my mind and in my spirit. And I suspect that many of you are disappointed, like me, outraged, and of course, saddened. And certainly our prayers go out to Leslie McSpadden and Michael Brown Sr., who is bearing an unbelievable weight and a grief the senseless and unjustified killing of their son, Michael Brown Jr. And it's only compounded by a justice system that is riddled with inequality. Everything about this grand jury proceeding in Ferguson was, as the experts have criticized, unusual. And quite frankly, it was riddled with an agenda not to give Michael Brown Jr. his due process by having a jury trial to determine the guilt or innocence of his killer, police officer Darren Wilson. Make no mistake, my friends, there was a secret trial going on here with an agenda to ensure that Darren Wilson go free for the killing, the unjustified killing of Michael Brown Jr. Michael Brown Jr. did not receive due process and fair treatment under the law. Because essentially what we're seeing and what we have seen throughout this process and what we are seeing even today, blaming Michael Brown for his own death, what we have seen subsequent the decision by the grand jury is painting him as a thug, painting him as an aggressor, despite the fact that Officer Darren Wilson is the one who pulled him into the police cruiser. They're painting Michael Brown as deserving of his own death, is what we are seeing essentially. I know I have to be very careful about what I say. I know. And like many of you in America, I waited with bated breath for the grand jury's decision, because we want to see an equal parceling out of justice in our country. I waited to see what the grand jury was going to do. A grand jury, by the way, was made up of 9 whites and 3 African Americans. The black community, my friends, for a long, very long time, spanning decades, relied on a system of justice to be fair, to be impartial, and to be without prejudice. I watched a very interesting video clip of Malcolm X addressing the same type of issue decades ago, and it still exists today. When it comes to doling out justice to criminals that commit crime in our community, justice is often swift and without equivocation. When it's a criminal activity perpetrated by blacks against whites, justice is swift and unrelenting. But when young black men are gunned down unjustifiably and killed by police, there's equivocation. There's a concerted effort to protect the police. There's an immunity built in our system that allows police to essentially get away with killing unarmed black men they perceive as a threat. And pouring through some of the reports about Darren Wilson's testimony before the grand jury, describing him as a demon, essentially, suggesting that he felt like he was a 4-year-old in the hands of a Hulk Hogan, demonizing this kid. This is not happening to young white men. The police are not gunning down young white men with impunity. This is happening to us all over the country. And I'm telling you, black fathers, I'm telling you, black mothers, sisters of young black men, wives of black men, children of old and young black men, this grand jury decision effectively and quite expectedly puts your loved ones in danger. That's right, I said it. This puts the lives of young black men in danger. And if nobody else is going to say it, Ron Holland is going to say it. What we've seen is a license for our young men to be killed with impunity and no consequences because of an imagined fear, a perceived threat. And this is what is going to happen. The imagined fear and perceived threat of every police officer in this country has essentially been given license for them to shoot down black men with impunity and with immunity. Because what we saw this week is yet again an example of how an unjustified shooting and killing of a young, unarmed young black man by police can be explained away using twisted and convoluted logic couched in legal jargon. And this is happening time and time again. Why the hell does a negative interaction with police almost always end in deadly force, excessive force, brutality, and an exertion of control that makes our community feel occupied by stormtroopers bent on exerting their will and their control on our young men? Why? When are the lives and humanity of black people going to be respected and valued in this country? Given all that we've experienced, given the terrible history of injustice, given the ongoing and persistent injustice, when is the life, our very existence, going to be perched on a pedestal to be cherished and to be highly regarded like anybody else in this country? Why are we always relegated to the lowest rung in society? Why? When will we ever see the day that justice is served when innocent or unarmed black men, young and old, are gunned down and killed unjustifiably by police? Michael Brown, Ezell Ford, Eric Garner, John Crawford, Dante Parker, Jonathan Farrell, Sean Bell, Orlando Barlow, Timothy Stansberry, Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams, Oscar Grant. The list goes on and on and on, and there are no repercussions here. On Monday, when it was announced that there would be no indictment of Darren Wilson, protests and demonstrations erupted and all around the country, people are justifiably upset and angry. People are outraged. People are understandably have no trust in a system that too often allows for this nonsense to keep happening. So these protests and demonstrations obviously will continue in various forms, whether it's on the streets, whether it's in the ballot box where people like McCullough and city councils that govern that section of Missouri, where they are no longer allowed to be voted into power. This is one of the reasons why we need to exercise our franchise at every single turn. There needs to be a massive voter registration in this country so that people like Bob McCullough with an agenda is not given power to exercise this kind of non-justice or injustice in this country. The response is going to be and has to be a legislative agenda that expresses our outrage. So the protests are going to happen in many forms. And as Michael Brown's family, as well as activists all over the country, as well as clergy and community leaders, and many in law enforcement, I might add, have been calling, every police officer in every department, in every jurisdiction, in every precinct, in every community should be required to wear a body camera to record every last interaction they have with the public. I don't care what the police union says. If not for the safety of our young black men, every damn law enforcement officer in this country should be wearing a body camera. So that we can see exactly what's going on, so that we are not left to the devices of people like Bob McCullough. Now watch this crazy nonsense, this press conference he held. Blaming the media, blaming social networking platforms like Facebook and Twitter for what he determined to be inaccuracies by witnesses. The fact is, my friends, if there was video footage of Darren Wilson gunning down Brown, I think there would have been perhaps a different result. Now, you know, some might argue we had video with Rodney King and we saw the results there. I don't know. But what I will say is that right now, outside the legislative response, there should be a requirement for every last officer in this country to wear a body cam. And what we need is our elected officials and the Justice Department to demand that every sworn police officer must, by requirement and by legislation, wear body cameras. Because what we've seen, especially on Facebook, you know, there are members of the public who right now, they have decided that they are going to use their cell phones to record negative interactions with the police. And police right now, I've seen it on many platforms now, police trying to intimidate and force people to shut those cameras off and even go as far as confiscating those cameras. This is where the Justice Department should take the lead on this and make it a requirement. And they should be clear and unequivocal. They are required to wear this. There needs to be legislative change. There needs to be changes in the laws. There needs to be a change in how police interact with our people. There is no reason that justice works for one community and not others, because this is not happening in the white community. It's not happening. Young white men are not being gunned down, despite the fact that they can be the most disrespectful people that I've seen. From the beginning, there was an effort underway to shield Darren Wilson from indictment, shield him from charges, shield him from a jury trial. The grand jury is not tasked with the responsibility of determining guilt or innocence. They are not the triers of fact. They are to determine if probable cause exists to bring an indictment and move forward with a trial. And everything that Bob McCullough said in his presentation screamed of probable cause. Because there is no question that Darren Wilson killed Mike Brown. And the very fact that conflict exists with the witness's statement suggests that a jury, along with cross-examination of witnesses, was required here. And every legal expert analyzing this case admits that the whole proceeding was unusual. From the time McCullough got involved, not bringing charges against Wilson, to his relationship with the police, to the document dump, and I've been hearing this word, document dump, that document dump foisted on the grand jury, to leaking information to the public. There were a myriad of things he did that suggest that his heart was not charging Darren Wilson. We all know the case. The people on the ground that were involved in burning those buildings, They knew that instinctively that this was going to happen. I'm not going to castigate anybody at this point in turn because we don't want violence, obviously. We don't want buildings being burned down, obviously, because this was an anticipated result. So they had been preparing for this. Insurance and our taxpayer dollars are going to go to rebuilding those buildings. So I'm not going to get off on that tangent, but what I will say, when you have bias and agenda tied to a system that too often is skewed against the interest of my community, the end result is another police officer going free. And those young people instinctively understand that. In my mind, and in the minds of so many across this country, and people around the world are watching this, this was a behind-the-scenes charade. This was a backroom secret jury trial that was going on. This was a farce, and there's no other determination here. Darren Wilson got special treatment. Not only was he given the benefit of the doubt, he was protected by a legal apparatus that protects its own. No other defendant get this kind of treatment. It is not routine what we've seen play out with Darren Wilson. This is not routine. Here, Bob McCullough talking about conflict in witness statements, talking about witnesses adjusting their statements, especially in the media, talking about forensics contradicting the witness statements. Darren Wilson had weeks to adjust his statements to match with what was being said by those witnesses on television. He did not write a police report immediately following the shooting of Michael Brown. He got counsel on what to say to adjust his story to match up with what witnesses were saying publicly. The whole point of a jury trial, the whole point of cross-examination by prosecutors and attorneys is to rout out contradictions, to rout out the lies and half-truths in front of a jury so that they can make the determination of guilt or innocence. They are the ones that have to be led by experts in this case. It was the role of the prosecutor to present a compelling narrative to the grand jury to get an indictment. It was not the role of the prosecutor to do a document dump and have the grand jury ferret through the evidence without the guidance of legal experts. The grand jury family is an investigative tool, but they are not legal or forensic experts. A jury with the guidance of legal experts and examination and cross-examination and guidance and instruction from a judge during and subsequent a trial is the process by which my community can have faith in this system. This was a complete and total farce. And the fact that they were essentially telegraphing this decision led me to believe a long time ago that this was the anticipated outcome. This is an outrage. This is sickening to me. And I'm tired of black men being gunned down, police. I'm tired of black men being gunned down by gang members. I'm tired of black men being gunned down by themselves. So-called black-on-black crime. I'm tired of arrogant, power-hungry thugs with a badge roaming the streets of our communities like predators, looking for an opportunity to snatch the life of young black men. And the question that plagues my spirit every single time this issue emerges is, when are white folks in this country going to be outraged? When are they going to express frustration that this is a plague, that young black men are being unjustifiably killed? They're quick to harp on black-on-black crime. Interestingly and forebodingly, they are silent when power and weight given by the police comes barreling down on innocent, unarmed black men, young and old. And I suspect, as I've said many times here and in other places, when their boys, white boys, are senselessly and unjustifiably murdered by uniformed thugs, we'll hear their outrage. Said this so many times. The black community, black parents being required to talk with their sons specifically about how to interact with police. As a black man, as a father of two sons, and a father of a daughter, an uncle, my nephews and nieces, and so many black men, we worry about this. So sick and tired of having this damn conversation. White folks don't grapple with these fears and concerns. This is real to us. This is not an imagined fear. It's based on years of experience. Years. Malcolm talked about it brilliantly. Dr. King talked about it brilliantly. And it shouldn't be that we're forced to have these conversations with our sons about how to interact with police. For me, this is an insult. This is a violation of my constitutional rights to engage an officer when he is wrong. White boys are not required to have these conversations, despite the fact that they can be the most despicable human beings on the face of this planet. They're most disrespectful. You've seen it, I've seen it, but they are not doing this in the white community. You have white folks running around here with assault rifles in certain states, in certain neighborhoods, and they are not being harassed by police. I watched a video the other day of a guy in a restaurant, the white guy fighting the police, literally throwing blows, knocking one police on his behind. Why aren't these white guys being shot down like dogs? And yet we are forced to have this conversation with our kids because police officers abuse their power. They're mired in a power trip. They have a superiority complex when they patrol our communities. This is despicable. What conversation are white dads having with their daggone sons about interacting with police? None. Where is the parity here? Where's the equality? Where's the notion of equal justice and equal enforcement in all communities? Watched a debate the other day with former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and Professor Michael Eric Dyson, and Giuliani reflected the sensibilities many folks, many white folks have about these issues. What about black on black crime? Clean up your own backyard and stop complaining about white officers. And they talk about the statistics of black on black crime. First of all, yes, there's a problem and we're dealing with it. But 83% of the crime in white communities are committed by other whites. Yet the police are not senselessly gunning down young white men and boys. White girls are more than likely to go and shoplift, but they are not being harassed by the police. And secondly, there are mobilization efforts in our community every day to stop the violence. Because to me, this is a specious argument advanced by people who either don't care or have no real appreciation of the pain that we experience when these issues emerge. And I really get tired of people minimizing the valiant efforts of so many groups and organizations and individuals who are making a difference in our community just to avoid having to address the injustices we see in our society. I can speak, we can speak with great authority and credibility about this issue because many of us are doing the work in cleaning our own backyard. Never bought into the argument that we can't fight injustice because of so-called black-on-black crime and because some knuckleheads are doing the wrong thing. We can condemn officers that deserve condemnation and still fight the nonsense that takes place in our community. I'm about to close. I'm going to end by saying this. I'm tired of having to accommodate the irrational fears and anxiety of police officers. I've heard the excuses time and again. They feared this. He looked like a demon. He had the strength of Hulk Hogan. I'm certainly sympathetic to the extraordinary job police officers contend with every day. Crime is bad. These officers put their lives on the line. But there comes a time when the police have to hold their own accountable. There comes a time where the community and this nation have to hold officers accountable, especially where unarmed black people are the victims of brutality and just unjustified shootings and killing. It's time that we hold them accountable. It's time that we approach this in an unpredictable way. That is using the power of our vote. That is being unpredictable in everything that we do so that they can't see us coming with regard to how we employ justice when injustice is certainly a daily reality in our community. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. We're going to continue watching the developments in Ferguson. And certainly I want to urge all of us to pray for Leslie McSpadden and Michael Brown Sr. as they grapple with this disappointment. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Today's show is also available on our Praise Charlotte website as well as Old School 105.3 website. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.